Standing in the door, I could see the lights on a drop zone. And I had assumed that was our drop zone way in the, ahead of us. And so that we had the red light, had everybody standing up, ready to jump. So when the plane started to get hit, and suddenly the pilot gives me the green light, I'm out the door immediately.
Got such an opening blast from the, an opening shot from the prop blast, and it broke this chin strap that we had on this helmet liner. And that's when I lost this famous leg bag that everybody talks about, just from the shock of the opening. It just flew right off my foot.
We came from the sky, we hit, and in any direction you went, there would be enemy. You knew it. And that was all part of what you accepted.
How do you prepare yourself mentally? Each man must do that himself. Each man must prepare himself mentally to make that jump.
In the back of your mind, you wonder what's going to happen and all that. You know, you've been trained and trained and trained, and what your job is going to be and what you're supposed to do. And that's what you've got to think about. You know, and we lost a lot of people that night. But you try to put it all on your mind.
And now, commemorating the 70th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, 1944. Live from Normandy, France, Northern Nevada's own 99.1 FM Talk. Here's Jerry Evans.
And just yesterday was inland from Utah Beach, watching and looking for the area where the 101st dropped in. Those were some guys there that you heard from Easy Company and A Band of Brothers, the HBO series that was produced by Tom Hanks, which is very accurate to true. And by the way, you heard during Fox News, Clint Riddle spoke to him yesterday. So we will have our brief interview with him. He's a character from Tennessee, and that's coming up a little bit later on this morning. Email I got before I left: I eagerly look forward to your broadcast from Normandy this coming June 6th. I wonder and hope that you might have a moment to mention the sacrifice of the men of the 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Infantry Division, who were part of the first wave to assault Omaha Beach on that dreadful morning. 103 members of the 29th Infantry Division hailed from Bedford, Virginia, a small town of about 3,000 when the National Guard Division was called up. There were still 34 members from Bedford in the division when they hit the beach. Of those, 19 were killed in the first few minutes of the invasion, three others being killed within the next few days. Total of 22 men killed in action from one small town. Percentage-wise, the greatest sacrifice of any town in America. Most of the country that even recalls D-Day probably knows about the men of the 29th Infantry. I hope you'll be able to give these men a moment of recognition when you do your broadcast. There's a wonderful book by author Alex Kershaw. He's here right now in Normandy, which tells the story of the Bedford Boys, which was the last book I read before I headed over here. It's a fantastic book. And yesterday, while I was walking around the American Cemetery, I saw one of the boys from Bedford's cross, a Yop. I forget his first name right now, but the last name was Yop, Y-O-P-P. And I just happened to be walking by and saw that. Again, my apologies, forgetting the first name, but the last name of Yop, from Virginia, and June 6, 1944. Another very hard to read on the air cross. The engraving on it that you see is: here rests in honored glory a comrade in arms known but to God. Almost went John Boehner on you there. Very, very moving experience to walk around the cemetery. Imagine your son leaving home a couple of years possibly before D-Day, getting a letter once a month or so, learning of D-Day on the radio, as most everybody in America did when they were glued to the radio and learned of the invasion of France, and then getting the telegram. In many cases, it was a month or a month and a half after their son would have been killed. that was what life was like coming out of the Depression and in the Depression during World War II. Over 9,000 graves at the American Cemetery. There are a total of 5 cemeteries in Normandy, France, the biggest one being there up above Omaha Beach. And as I said, Clinton Riddle from Tennessee, he's coming up a little bit later on in the morning on the broadcast, as well as another veteran. There's a walkway that goes from the cemetery down to the beach. And on the way down walking to the beach, I met another D-Day veteran, Cosmo, his first name. And I recorded a couple of minutes with him. And again, the people that are there that have been there and going there for the last couple of days, they treat the D-Day veterans by rock stars. There, some of the people stand back and they seem like they don't want to approach them, which is understandable, but I approached a couple of them, recorded an interview with them, and while you're recording them, Craig, a lot of people start gathering around, 20 to 30 people, just to listen to the questions. There was a journalist from Holland who recorded my interview with Cosmo that we'll play just a little bit later on this morning. And I want to remind you again, KCMY 102.5 FM is simulcasting the broadcast this morning, as well as Renegade Radio at 101.3 is simulcasting the broadcast as well. And Facebook, we got a lot of great photos yesterday of these veterans, the British veterans as well as the American veterans. And so those should be posted just about any time now. So if you want to go to our Facebook page and see these veterans, we got some great photos of the veterans. I'll also invite your phone calls at 884-9910 from out of the area, area code 775-884-9910. And if you've got any thoughts about D-Day, what it means to you, a family member that participated, or any thoughts that you have on this particular day in history. One thing that
Jerry, Tim,
go ahead, Greg.
Tim has a D-Day story. He is called in.
Let me get to Tim in just a second. I'll call for him. Right now on the West Coast is right about when the battle started. I should have mentioned it earlier. And Buster Schaaf, who we had on the air earlier, he arrived on the beach at 6:37. The first boat that arrived, the Higgins boat, was at 6:32. Now, it's in the afternoon here. It's 9 hours later. But if you can imagine what was going on there on the West Coast in Nevada, right at this time was the complete hell, for lack of a better term. Good morning, Tim. How are you? Go ahead, Tim. And let me just pre-apologize for a little bit of a delay. That's this just the technology. So go ahead, and I will listen to you. There is about a two-second delay here, but go right ahead.
You bet. I was I took my father to Normandy a number of years ago. He was a B-25 pilot in World War II. And it was, of course, a tremendous experience to be there with him. He did not serve there, but he told me a story there that I thought was interesting. He said that when he was in flight school, they were just all finishing, and they lined up his whole school, his whole class, alphabetically A through C. And an officer they didn't know came out and started counting off. And they went A through M, and they took those people away, and they sent everybody else, my father included, back to their barracks. Come to find out that because my last name starts with W, I'm here today because A through M became glider pilots for Normandy.
That is an interesting story. I've got you. The interesting story, just because your name started with a W, is the reason why you're here today. Thank you very much for the call, Tim. I appreciate it. And again, 884-9910, if you've got a thought or a comment about D-Day, what it means to you, and also if you had anyone participate. And I was very happy about some of the sponsors, Brad Anderson in particular, putting me in touch with Clarence Vickery, who's living in a home in Pocatello, Idaho now. And also the D-Day Memorial in Bedford, Virginia, and those folks there put me in touch with Buster Schaaf, who shared his story. He's the one that arrived at 6:37 a.m. And Craig, let me do a quick check of the time here, and it looks like we're probably going to take a break. Congressman Mark Amaday is scheduled to join us for a couple of moments at 7:15. Governor Brian Sandoval later on this morning. So let me have you go ahead and jump into the break, and we'll be right back with you. And if Congressman Amaday is not on the phone with you, we'll jump into some of the British veterans that we spoke to again yesterday at Sword Beach on the coast of Normandy, live from France. I'm Jerry Evans for KKFT.
nobody forced you to do this. You volunteered. And it was the notion that you wanted to do something. You wanted to be with the best.
But once you got in there, you was proud to be. And we was proud to be working with the guys we were working with.
Live from Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, honoring those who served. This is KKFT 99.1.
Having done two tours in Iraq, you know, we had the armored vehicles, we had the armored vest, best equipment money can buy, we had air cover, we had all the support, and then you think about those guys, and they just ran up right at the beach. No armor, very little, if any, air support, right into the gun emplacements. It just boggles the mind, and you contemplate the valor those guys had.
Thank you very much, Craig. And again, Congressman Mark Amaday scheduled to appear. So if he calls in, great. If he doesn't, that's okay. We have plenty of what I hope you find very interesting information. The Normandy Veterans Association, this is the last year of any commemoration. Canadians and the British invaded Juneau Gold and Sword. And the reason why the beach is called Gold Beach is the sand has somewhat of a gold color, as does Omaha and Utah. And I want to go back to the cemetery yesterday at Omaha Beach and mention one thing that was kind of profound to me that I think probably family members do this, is you start to look at the headstones, and the headstones are all white marble and they're engraved. Some of the family members, or some perhaps a friend or another veteran, they take sand from the beach, which is damp, and they put it, it's kind of like they almost smear it into the names. They just stand out, and that just kind of hit me as profound, that they take sand from the beach where many of them were killed, and then they put them in their names. The names are read very easily that way, but it's probably, there's something deeper than that that I can't quite verbalize at this particular moment. 884-9910 is the phone number. If you'd like to call in and tell us your D-Day story or anything you'd like to share today, and as Craig said, don't forget, at 802, we'll draw the first name of the pre-qualifiers to win the M1 from Legacy Sports, as well as the 500 rounds of ammo, and that ammo courtesy of Jack Ross Ammo. We thank again all of our sponsors of the broadcast: Jack Ross Ammo, Anderson Dorn and Raider, Dynamic Diesel, The Bungalows, and Northern Nevada Coin. Craig, if you're ready and all queued up, here's another, as my son calls them, a character. This guy from England, a Leslie John Reeves. He was with the Tank Brigade, was at Boston, too, and was poking a little fun at the 82nd that the British helped at Boston. And he's turning 90 next week on June 10th. And Craig, if you're ready, Leslie John Reeves, a D-Day vet from Britain on KKFT.
I was 19 when we landed, and I was 20 on D10, which is the 16th, which is next week. Mm-hmm. I'll be 90.
You'll be 90 next week?
Next week.
Oh, good for you.
Happy birthday.
And thanks for your help at Boston.
I was in the desert with Monty. We were in the desert in 42, Alamein. Uh-huh. And then we landed D-Day. We did Market Garden, then we did the Bulge, and then we liberated Tilburg, then we liberated Venlo, Venray, and then we went from there to Goosebeck, which was the start of Operation Vegetable, which took us through the Reichswald, Cleve, Gock, and over the Rhine into Germany. Mm-hmm. And then Monster, Osnabrück. Yeah, that's it.
Which beach did you land on?
Juneau.
Leslie John Powers, character again. The champagne was flowing and the British were having a good time. And one more Normandy Veterans Association member is a guy by the name of Douglas Austin, also a character. And when talking to him about what he did during the Normandy invasion and that 11 months when they were crossing across Normandy is he pulled out a map to show me his map that he carries around and a red line on the areas that he went to and everything. And later this morning, you'll hear a comment from Melinda, Dynamic Diesel, one of our sponsors, and also something that her uncle did, which was to keep a map and draw lines on the map of where they went and notes on what they did. That's coming up a little bit later on this morning. But if you're all queued up, Craig, Douglas Austin from
I landed on
Great
Gold
Britain
Beach
on
in 1944, D plus 19, which was the end of June, with the third Scots Guards tank, with Churchill tanks. And then we made our way up from the beaches towards Villers Vicarage. Not this area, and then we made our way through France and Belgium, Holland and Germany. That's what we did. That's the Guards, 6 Guards Stamp Brigade, operational route from 1944 to 1945. We left Portsmouth to Aramanche, round here Falaise, and if you follow that red line right through Holland and, through Belgium and Holland, that's 6 months fighting in there, look, with all the lines, red lines. Then through into Germany, and I finished at Lübeck on the Baltic. The rest of the brigade went up to Kiel, and then came back to past Hamburg and down to Lauenburg, and that was the end of it on the 8th of May.
So that took you approximately
11 months.
Right, and where were you on VE Day?
I was 20 miles from Lübeck, but that was it. So, and then I was 21 then, because I had my 21st birthday on the beaches at Normandy. You saw a lot of your comrades wounded or killed, and you just went on, and you got harder in your determination to follow it through.
And get it over with.
That's right. We're just lucky to be here, aren't we? And I appreciate America for their help, because absolutely, without them, we wouldn't have won it.
And they do know and appreciate what America did. As I mentioned earlier, that the French people do as well. And one of the really heartening things was to see that yesterday. And you see it all around town in the village I'm in today, as well as throughout France. It is essentially a holiday for most people. I think children are out of school. Of course, traffic and everything is a bit of an issue all along the Normandy coast with the dignitaries, as I'll call them, Putin, the Ukraine president, President Obama, and the Queen Mary herself at the D-Day Memorial at the cemetery today. As they were, I was there yesterday and they were setting it up. And the French do appreciate it. As you heard Douglas there, the British appreciate Americans and the sacrifice that they did. One of the people that I overheard talking yesterday made this comment that, why did the Americans take Omaha? Omaha being the very worst of the worst, over 2,000 men killed at Omaha Beach. British had it tough too at Juno and Sword, the hedgehogs and everything along the beach. They had a tough slog of it as well. But there's a British gentleman that does appreciate what America did. And talking to another veteran there who acted somewhat of a chaperone for an older Normandy Veteran Association member, one of the things he brought up was that the British government actually stops older people from traveling because of the cost of returning the person or the body if something happens. It's been a major process, especially for the Normandy veterans, to attend some of these the ceremonies and memorials that are going on. Can you imagine being 90, 91, 92, 93, wanting to go back to honor the fallen, to pay tribute to the veterans, and your government telling you you can't travel because of the cost to the government of perhaps having to return you home? You can't travel and pay tribute to the fallen because of the cost. And yet you gave that country or that government the freedom to exist today. Bigger government, less freedom. And that's the one little political commentary I'll make today. But I was just shocked at the comments from another veteran who kind of acts for a chaperone for one of the older Normandy Veterans Association members. Don't forget the M1 giveaway from Legacy Sports, 500 rounds of ammo as well from Jack Ross Ammo. Craig's going to draw the name at 8:02 this morning. If you've pre-qualified over the last couple of weeks, we'll draw a name. We'll give you 15 minutes to call. If you don't call, we'll draw another name and somebody will win the M1 as well as the 500 rounds of ammo. Douglas referred to the Bocage. Bocage was also a terrible slog for the Allied troops trying to cross, especially out of Normandy, into south to France. There were hedgerows, and each farm or field was surrounded by hedgerows that even a Sherman tank could not get through. Country doesn't look like that now. They've taken out all of the hedges, most of them anyway, and if, as you're driving through France, and Craig, I think you'd be proud of me, I actually drove. I'm about 40 to 45 miles from Omaha and Utah, and one thing I'll compliment the French on as well is that the cars are just like American cars. Steering wheel on the left, and also the roads. You drive just like you're in the United States. So one thing that I really would suggest, because a lot of people dread crossing the Atlantic from the West Coast and traveling to Europe, is that once you get over here, and it's from the West Coast about 13-hour flight, you really should do this. You should take your children and not let them forget about the sacrifice that these guys did, these kids. There was actually a 15-year-old that was killed on Omaha Beach. He stole his driver's license of his brother so that he could join. He was a medic and was killed on the beach at Omaha. That's what they did back then. It's a great country. It's beautiful. You drive through the countryside, and it's much like what you might picture Alabama or Georgia. Very agricultural, very green, and just a beautiful country. And again, the French people, all of the ones that we've met, extremely polite, helpful, and they are celebrating liberty today in France. We'll take a bottom of the hour break, and don't forget, later we've got Clinton Riddle. You heard Fox News, a soundbite from him at the top of the hour, 93. He's a character. He's coming up a little bit later on this morning. And in the last hour, we'll have an interview with a woman named Pauline, who comes from a very important French family. She's a descendant of what someone called the Thomas Jefferson of France. And we visited her at the estate on the first day that we were here and recorded the interview. German soldiers lived for the entire time. Germany invaded, excuse me, in 1940. And we had a great conversation with her. So with my voice going out here at this particular moment, it'd be appropriate to take the bottom of the hour break. You're listening to 99.1 FM Talk.
We were ready. We were stationed in England for about a year before D-Day.
They put us in a camp preparing us for D-Day. In other words, just about a week before D-Day, they put us in no liberties, no nothing. You couldn't get out of the camp.
They had guards around the marshalling area, so nobody could leave. That's when you felt that this is it. We did not know which day. We did not know where we were going to jump until we were locked in. Then they had the briefing to tell you exactly what your mission was.
You're listening to a special live broadcast from the beach at Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, June 6th, 1944, on 99.1 FM Talk.
Good morning back in Nevada. This is Jerry Evans coming to you live from the beach at Normandy. I'm standing in a home with a window open looking out at the beach and the water, the English Channel. And this is this particular town of Olgat in France is approximately 10 miles east of Sword Beach, as I try to get my directions as I'm standing here. This particular town was requisitioned, is would be the term, essentially confiscated by the Germans. And they took all of these historic homes along the waterfront here, and they made them uninhabitable. They took out the staircase of this home that I'm living in. And on YouTube, you can there's one D-Day documentary in particular where it shows the boats going up to the beach with a lot of homes right along the beach, which you don't picture. That's not the situation at Omaha and Utah. That was pretty much open country and sand dunes. But this particular area, you can see some of these homes that are along this historic village here on the coast of Normandy here in France. Our phone number is 775-884-9900. 10. We spent the day yesterday at the D-Day Memorial and the cemetery. 9,387 Americans are buried in the American cemetery. Teddy Roosevelt's oldest son, Theodore Jr., is also buried there. Those were the days during World War II when generals and brigadier generals actually fought on the battlefield. In fact, the very first brigadier general that was killed that day came in on a glider with his Jeep in the glider. The body of the glider was modified to metal as opposed to the lighter wood gliders. And he was killed on the very first day of D-Day. But the one thing that you think about is the fact that that was the day when the brigadier general or the general fought on the battlefield with their soldiers. And by the way, that Clinton Riddle, 93 years old, is coming up a little bit later on this morning. He was a part of that glider regiment and landed at St. Mirren-Glisse. That was the first town that the Americans took over during World War II, during the push across Normandy. I asked him about that particular paratrooper who got his parachute caught on the steeple at the church, which we drove by yesterday. His name was John Steele. He died about 5 years ago. I think it was in 2009. And he didn't know him personally, but he had heard about him. They fought essentially for 33 days. Of the 158 people in his regiment, only 35 survived, and he is the last surviving member of his company.
Jerry, we'll talk to
him a little bit later on this morning. We'll have that for you.
Jerry, we have a gentleman on the line that you spoke with a couple of weeks ago, Harvey from Gardnerville, who has some memories of his parents that you had talked about earlier a couple of weeks ago with them.
Oh, please. Harvey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jerry. Great show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, now I know who you are.
Yes,
yeah,
you do.
Harvey, please, if you can, repeat the story that you told to me about your parents.
Well,
and what D-Day means to you.
What it means to me, Jerry, is my parents were both sitting in a concentration camp in Poland in the Auschwitz group of prisons from 1940 through 1945. And my dad learned in camp that the Americans were coming. Now, this is 4 years into their imprisonment in a labor camp in Poland, and they knew that the Americans were coming to help liberate them. It would take yet another year to do so. And although the Russians were officially the liberators of the camp, the Americans were right there behind them. And that gave them strength and hope that they would, in fact, see freedom at some point. That's what a D-Day means to me personally. And it's somewhat emotional, and Dad always thanks the Americans.
Completely understand. And you told me, Harvey, in the area that you grew up in the Bay Area of San Francisco, that there was hardly anybody that you knew that didn't have the tattoo on their arm.
That's correct. All of our parents and parents' friends who came to the States post-1950, they could not exit Europe. It took 4 to 5 years to get status of an immigration visa, in fact, to leave Europe. Dad lived along with Mom in Austria for some time after the war, and my sister, although she was born in Germany, they quickly left, and by 51 they were here, and the rest is history. It's quite an amazing journey for them, and it's all because of D-Day. And thank you for doing what you're doing, Jerry.
I appreciate that story, Harvey. Thank you very much for sharing that. Again, 775-884-9910. And later this morning, I have an interview with Pauline, whose couple of cousins were sent to concentration camps in Germany as well, and they died there. But some just amazing stories of this woman who lived at this historic estate in France while German soldiers, not the SS, but German soldiers, lived in their garage. And what they did, in fact, I saw some drawings that the German soldiers, out of boredom, and this was the Hitler Youth Regiment, and the drawings on the walls, one of them is actually kind of funny. They drew an Indian in headdress with the feathers and everything, and several other photos. That's coming up a little bit later this morning as we do this historic day broadcast from the beach here in Normandy. Again, 775-884-9910. The M1 giveaway and the 500 rounds of ammo is coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. Also want to mention our sponsors, Gene Herman, running for District 5, County Commissioner in Washoe County, Jack Ross Ammo, Anderson Dorn and Raider, Dynamic Diesel, The Bungalows, and again, thanks to Jay for providing some intel before coming over here. He just finished up his second trip over here. Today, Jay, because if you were here the last couple of days, especially cold, windy, rainy, it's the weather here is a lot like Monterey, California. Today is absolutely stunning. Crystal clear blue skies, a very warm day. It must be in the 70s, approaching 80, as I stand and look out at the English Channel and some very plump French bodies on the beach. Now, they're probably not French. They might be American. I'm not sure. But 884-9910 is the phone number. And coming up, again, we will have a couple of D-Day vets, one of them in particular. I interviewed just a couple of hundred yards from where he ran up the beach on June 6th, 1944, as we honor the fallen and pay tribute to the veterans, all veterans. We honor you all. Thank you. And do know that the French people appreciate the liberty and the freedom that our D-Day vets gave to them 70 years ago today. Jerry Evans coming to you live from the beach at Normandy in France on KKFT, KCMY, and 101.3.
And that day that we got the orders to get in the planes, this is it.
We had confidence in our leaders and all the plans and preparations that had taken place before the invasion. So we were confident and calm.
Live from Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, honoring those who served. This is KKFT 99.1.
It reminds me of when I was a little girl and we sat around the radio and listened to what was going on with the war. And we had to go live with our grandmother who lived in Idaho at the time, and we weren't able to go home until after D-Day, so it made a big impression on me. My Uncle Ernie Boucher, he was a pilot. They virtually saved our Earth, I think, from total disaster. I thought that was probably the bravest generation that ever lived, and we're seeing the end of it, and I hope this new generation that's coming up will able to live up to what they gave up.
And Gene, I can tell you that there are some young people listening back in Nevada this morning who are calling their friends and telling them to listen. So hopefully we'll have more. And you will also be encouraged and heartened to know that the French people and the youth here celebrate this day, liberty. And there are posters all around the village I'm at. And then yesterday at the D-Day Memorial at the cemetery, buses and buses of French youth. So today's active duty military, a lot of those people were there too. And again, they treat the D-Day veterans, that some that walk around, some in wheelchairs, treat them as true celebrities. And Cosmo Utero is one of those veterans. I was walking down to Omaha Beach from the cemetery on the walkway there, and on the bench there with one of the directors of the National World War II Museum in New Orleans was there with Cosmo Utero. He was with H Company, and he had actually run up that beach. He was looking for where he ran up. It looks completely different today than when he ran up there 70 years ago. So, Craig, if you're ready, let's go with Cosmo Utero live from the beach at Omaha yesterday on 99.1 FM Talk, KKFT.
Cosmo Utero, I'm originally from Massachusetts. Okay, and what company were you with?
H Company.
You were here on D-Day?
Yes, Omaha. The orders landed. I mean, I was carrying ammunition for mortars, and I lost everything getting off the landing craft because there was a crater there. And so when I landed, I had nothing. I had to pick up a rifle from someone, you know, so.
Where we're sitting right now is 200 or 300 yards off the beach. Can you kind of remember where you came in?
I tried it down here. I didn't because I remember there was a bunker house to the right. I don't see any structures here now. I see a small piece of foundation there. That may have been it. I'm not sure. But I was about 200 or 300 yards to the left of that when I landed, and worked my way because I couldn't go over the cliff, so I worked my way to the right because there was an opening where this foundation is the only opening, so I had to get up through that way. The rangers claimed make went up the cliffs, but I couldn't do that, so, and I didn't know. As I said, all I had was a rifle. I had nothing else, and worried about the Germans maybe using gas. That's I'm worried of not having a gas mask if that happened. Mm-hmm. So I finally met up with some of my company when I got up around the opening there, and it wasn't until the next morning that I got the company got together with the rest of my platoon.
H hour was 6:30. What time did you arrive?
I came up at the after lunch.
After lunch.
Okay. So, the beach was littered with everything there. So, cloudy, cold, soaked. Mm-hmm. So, as I come down here now, though, my memories, because I can't, the landmarks are not there. I couldn't point out exactly where I landed, but.
Does it, this vegetation that is all around here, was it here then?
No.
So it was just
dunes?
No, it was dunes?
Beach and then cliffs. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, high cliffs. No, this, I don't know if it was up there or way down there. I couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd find better landmarks, but I didn't.
Is this your first trip back?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The 70th, obviously.
Yes.
Where were you on VE Day?
We had gone. I'd gone as far as the Elbe River to meet the Russians. It was past Berlin. Retreat back after the war. Give the land all back to Russia that we had all conquered. Yeah. So
when you got here at 12 noon, just to get back to the day and the time that you landed, you said it was a mess here.
Yeah.
Had any equipment arrived yet?
Yes. Oh, yes.
They were starting to put equipment on.
Yeah,
they had finally broken through.
Yeah, there was a ship on fire to my left. I think, I don't know what kind of ship it was, but I think it was some kind of a troop carrier. I don't know. And I remember the battleship was beyond that, because when that thing fired, I know everything shook. I mean, there was a lot of men floating in the water, mm-hmm. and equipment, tanks never got to shore. So, that's...
But you made it through.
I made it through, and I'm still here.
Yeah. Oh.
My friend from Erie was in another plane. When I hit the ground, I hit about 2 feet away from him. And him and I start walking around looking for more of our troops. And we were running into Germans everywhere, but we had to hide. You know, because if we didn't, we were dead meat.
And then there I was with a trench knife and a canteen and about 6 candy bars in my pocket, ready to fight the German army, you know.
Live from Normandy on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, honoring those who served. This is KKFT 99.1.